Trump broadens Cuba sanctions to foreign companies in most aggressive extraterritorial crackdown since embargo. And number 10,022, takeaways by Plaquemium AI Hyde and number 9,650, on May 1, 2026, Trump signed an executive order extending U.S. sanctions to foreign companies operating across energy, defense, metals and mining, financial services, and security sectors in Cuba, representing the most aggressive extraterritorial sanctions regime since the embargo began. The executive order authorizes secondary sanctions against any foreign person conducting or facilitating transactions with designated Cuban entities, creating liability chains that extend to facilitating banks, shipping companies, and service providers anywhere in global commerce. The sanctions follow Trump and #X27's January 2026 ultimatum threatening tariffs on countries sending crude oil to Cuba, which prompted Mexico to halt shipments and contributed to major blackouts across the island and suspension of foreign airline flights. The Trump administration escalated its economic pressure campaign against Havana on May 1, 2026, signing an executive order that extends U.S. sanctions beyond Cuban government officials to encompass foreign companies operating across virtually every sector of the island's economy. The move, targeting entities in energy, defense, metals and mining, financial services, and security sectors, represents the most aggressive extraterritorial sanctions regime imposed on Cuba since the embargo began decades ago, according to Jeremy Painter, a former sanctions investigator at the U.S. Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control. The executive order authorizes secondary sanctions against any foreign person conducting or facilitating transactions with designated Cuban entities. Two White House officials confirmed the order targets people, entities, and affiliates supporting Cuba's security apparatus or complicit in corruption and human rights violations. Cuban Foreign Minister Bruno Rodriguez rejected the sanctions as unilateral coercive measures that violate the United Nations Charter and aim to impose collective punishment against the Cuban people. The timing arrived precisely as Cuba held its traditional May Day celebrations. Rodriguez stated on social media that the U.S. has no right whatsoever to impose measures against Cuba or against third countries or entities. They will not intimidate us. This represents the latest salvo in Trump's escalating confrontation with Havana, coming 4 months after U.S. forces entered Caracas to seize Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro on January 3, 2026. Trump subsequently warned, without providing specifics, that Cuba is next. Secondary sanctions create third-party liability. The sanctions architecture marks a departure from prior restrictions by explicitly targeting non-U.S. companies. Painter, now a partner at Hughes Hubbard and Reed Law Firm, characterized the order as the most significant one for non-American companies since the U.S. embargo against Cuba began decades ago. Oil and gas, mining companies, and banks that have carefully segregated their Cuba operations from the United States are no longer protected, Painter said. The secondary sanctions mechanism creates liability chains extending beyond direct Cuban counterparties to encompass facilitating banks, shipping companies, and service providers anywhere in global commerce. The practical effect compounds existing pressure from Trump's earlier threat to impose punishing tariffs on any country sending crude oil to Cuba. That January 2026 ultimatum prompted Mexico, a top Cuban oil supplier, to halt shipments following the U.S. cessation of Venezuelan oil exports after Maduro's removal. The fuel shortage has contributed to major blackouts across Cuba and forced multiple foreign airlines to suspend flights to the island. Coalition building and allied friction. The Cuba sanctions unfold against backdrop tensions in Trump's broader Middle East strategy. On April 30, 2026, 1 day before the Cuba order, the State Department circulated an internal cable to diplomatic posts worldwide soliciting participation in a new maritime freedom construct coalition to reopen the Strait of Hormuz. The cable instructed diplomats to announce the coalition's formation and ask for partner participation by Friday, May 1. The coalition would coordinate diplomatic efforts, align sanctions, and share information to ensure safe vessel transit through the critical Gulf waterway. Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth dismissed existing UK and French multilateral security efforts involving 30-plus nations as silly, suggesting Europe should have less fancy conferences in Europe and get in a boat. Hegseth declared that Europe and Asia have benefited from our protection for decades, but the time for freeriding is over. Iranian Navy Commander Shahram Irani called the U.S. blockade of Iranian ports piracy and labeled American actions as maritime terrorists, stating that the Strait of Hormuz is closed from the Arabian Gulf, meaning they have no right of passage from there. United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres warned on April 30 that consequences of continued global energy supply disruptions grow worse with each passing hour. The parallel coalition building efforts reveal the Trump administration's strategy of constructing ad hoc coalitions aligned with specific objectives while marginalizing traditional multilateral frameworks. This approach creates friction with European allies simultaneously managing their own Iran crisis response while facing secondary sanction exposure in Cuba. Implementation complexity and compliance burdens. The secondary sanctions architecture introduces severe compliance challenges for companies lacking sophisticated trade finance and legal infrastructure. This dynamic became evident in the aftermath of the Supreme Court's February 2026 ruling striking down most of Trump's tariffs, when thousands of businesses confronted bureaucratic obstacles to obtaining refunds of duties the government had illegally collected. Richard Brown, who operates sneaker accessory company Proof Culture from Ohio, kept an audio diary documenting his struggle to navigate the refund process without access to customs brokers or trade lawyers. "I don't want to be a customs broker when I grow up," Brown said. Trade experts warn that thousands of U.S. businesses may never recover billions in promised tariff refunds due to procedural complexity. The Cuba secondary sanctions create analogous challenges at greater scale for international companies. Firms must now conduct extensive due diligence across Cuban counterparties, trace ownership structures through shell companies, and monitor constantly updated sanctions lists. Banks face liability for processing payments involving Cuban entities even when transactions occur entirely outside U.S. jurisdiction. Critical compliance gap. Non-U.S. companies operating in Cuban energy, mining, and financial sectors now face U.S. sanctions exposure regardless of whether they conduct dollar-denominated transactions or maintain U.S. operations. The extraterritorial reach extends liability chains through facilitating banks and service providers globally. The White House statement accompanying the executive order accused Cuba of providing a permissive environment for hostile foreign intelligence, military, and terrorist operations less than 100 miles from the American homeland, specifically citing alleged alignment with Iran and Hezbollah. Rodriguez countered that while the U.S. government represses its own people in the streets, it seeks to punish ours, who are heroically resisting the U.S. imperialism's attacks. The U.S. has maintained long-standing demands that Cuba open its state-run economy, pay reparations for properties expropriated under former leader Fidel Castro, and hold free and fair elections. Cuba has consistently stated its socialist government structure is not up for negotiation. Capital flight and currency pressure. The sanctions regime accelerates capital withdrawal from Cuban exposure across multiple asset classes. International banks face impossible compliance calculus, maintain Cuban banking relationships and risk U.S. sanctions, or exit Cuban operations entirely and strand existing loan portfolios. European energy majors with Cuban offshore exploration agreements confront similar dilemmas, particularly as oil prices remain elevated due to Strait of Hormuz disruptions. Mining companies operating Cuban nickel and cobalt facilities face immediate sanctions risk under the metals and mining sector designation. Cuba holds substantial nickel reserves, and several Canadian mining firms maintain significant Cuban operations. The executive order's broad sectoral language provides Treasury's Office of Foreign Assets Control expansive discretion in designating entities as sanctionable. The financial services prohibition extends beyond Cuban banks to encompass any institution facilitating Cuban government transactions. This creates systemic risk for correspondent banking networks, where transaction screening must now flag Cuban nexus across layered payment chains. The secondary sanctions threat effectively creates dollar clearing restrictions without formally designating Cuba as subject to comprehensive sanctions. Currency pressure compounds through multiple channels. Remittances from Cuban expatriates, a critical hard currency source, face disruption as financial intermediaries exit the market. Tourism revenue continues declining as airline suspensions reduce accessibility and fuel shortages create transportation bottlenecks within Cuba. The government's capacity to service external debt deteriorates as dollar reserves deplete. The Plaquemines view the Cuba sanctions represent economic warfare doctrine extending beyond immediate hemispheric objectives to establish precedent for extraterritorial sanctions architecture applicable to future adversaries. The timing, one day after the Maritime Freedom Construct cable circulated, reveals coordinated pressure across geographically distinct theaters leveraging similar coercive tools. Three implications warrant institutional attention. First, the secondary sanctions framework creates third-party liability chains that extend far beyond direct Cuban counterparties. Any company with Cuban exposure anywhere in its supply chain, payment network, or corporate structure now faces potential U.S. sanctions. This dramatically expands the universe of affected entities beyond typical sanctions targets. Companies must conduct deep due diligence across vendors, customers, banks, and service providers to identify latent Cuban exposure. Second, the sanctions architecture establishes infrastructure replicable against other adversaries. The sectoral designations covering any other sector of the Cuban economy provide Treasury nearly unlimited discretion. This open-ended language can be copied into future executive orders targeting different countries with minimal modification. Institutional investors should model portfolio exposure to similar sanctions regimes potentially applied to other economies where U.S. relationships remain contentious. Third, implementation occurs during maximum stress on global energy markets and correspondent banking systems. The Strait of Hormuz closure already constrains oil supply. UN Secretary General Guterres warned consequences grow worse with each passing hour as of April 30. Adding Cuba sanctions during this period compounds systemic risk. Banks managing Iranian sanctions compliance while adding Cuban sanctions screening face operational breaking points. Energy markets absorbing Hormuz disruptions cannot easily accommodate additional supply restrictions if sanctions deter Cuban oil development. The sanctions arrive amid broader questions about U.S. refund mechanisms following the February Supreme Court tariff ruling. If thousands of U.S. companies struggle to recover illegally collected tariffs from their own government, foreign companies face exponentially greater obstacles recovering assets frozen under sanctions later deemed improperly applied. The procedural complexity Brown documented for tariff refund scales to institutional magnitude for sanctions compliance, particularly for non-U.S. entities lacking direct treasury access. Capital should position for escalating compliance costs across sectors with emerging market exposure, particularly energy and financial services. The Cuba precedent establishes that secondary sanctions can be imposed rapidly with minimal advance notice and sweeping sectoral scope. Portfolio companies require enhanced due diligence protocols tracing counterparty exposure through multiple relationship layers. So what? Portfolio implications across asset classes. Institutional investors face three immediate positioning decisions. First, any portfolio company with operations in Cuban energy, mining, or financial services sectors requires immediate compliance review. The executive order's language extending to any other sector of the Cuban economy provides Treasury broad designation authority. Companies should assume expansive interpretation. Second, correspondent banks with Cuban clearing relationships face binary choices: exit Cuban operations or risk U.S. sanctions. This creates stranded asset risk for loan portfolios and operational infrastructure. European and Latin American banks with significant Cuban exposure warrant credit review, particularly those with meaningful dollar clearing volume where sanctions would prove most disruptive. Third, the secondary sanctions architecture establishes precedent applicable to future adversaries. Portfolio construction should incorporate scenario analysis for similar sanctions regimes potentially applied to other contentious relationships. The Cuba order demonstrates that comprehensive sectoral sanctions can be imposed with minimal notice during periods of maximum market stress. The bottom line, Trump's Cuba sanctions extend beyond hemispheric policy to establish extraterritorial enforcement mechanisms creating liability chains throughout global commerce. The timing, during simultaneous Strait of Hormuz coalition building and ongoing tariff refund chaos, reveals an administration willing to compound systemic stress to achieve geopolitical objectives. Institutional capital should price increased compliance costs, elevated sanctions risk, and potential for rapid policy escalation without advance notice. Companies with any Cuban exposure anywhere in their value chain require immediate legal review. The precedent established applies far beyond Cuba.